Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. And if this is your virgin voyage, allow me to share with you our mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degreed thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N. Coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday at this time. Don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturdays, 6 to 7 p.m. And overnight Sunday mornings, 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we'd love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right, the Alan Nathan Show is entering its 28th year of national syndication, all thanks to you, reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week. Again, all thanks to you. And by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right, please get out of the thought control business. Also, a very quick shout out, not just to all the stations who've been taking me over for well over 2.5 decades, but also all these podcast networks picking us up, whether it's Listen Notes, Amazon Music, Amazon Music UK, India, Italy, Apple, of course. We've got Spotify, very good friends at Spotify. And, of course, CRN Talk, radio network unto themselves, have been picking us up for years. Check them out at crntalk.com. Go to their channel 4. There we are. And, of course, they also take us over Roku, and I can go on and on. But without a doubt, without you folks, none of the rest would be possible. So thank you again to my audience. We have assisting in the opining and analyzing old friend of the show, Hans von Spakovsky, manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative and a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He also served for a couple of years as a member of the Federal Election Commission. Additionally, he's co-author with John Fund of the highly praised new book entitled Our Broken Elections, How the Left Changed Everything. No, but anyway, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. Hans von Spakovsky, great to have you back. How are you today?
Alan, I'm doing just fine, thanks.
Well, the Ninth Appellate Court stayed a lower court's restraining order to stop Trump's use of the National Guard in L.A., and now they're going to preside over a hearing on California's challenge to Trump on the matter. This was initially kind of a win for Trump against the lower court that wanted to put the kibosh on his use altogether. It seems to me that when we look at Title 10, Trump is on more than solid ground when it comes to his prerogative to say when the National Guard should be called. Where am I mistaken?
Well, you're not. In fact, that statute is very simple, and it gives three grounds for the president to be able to federalize the National Guard, which are normally under the control of a state's government. One is if there's an invasion of the U.S. The second is if there's a rebellion within the U.S. And the third is if he needs it to enforce federal law and protect federal authorities. And that third situation is exactly what we have had in L.A., where you've had mobs trying to stop enforcement of federal immigration laws, attacking ICE officers, and attacking federal buildings. I mean, it fits squarely within that.
Really? That's how come when the lower court ruled against them, that was U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer siding with Gavin Newsom, saying that Trump exceeded his authority by taking control of the state's National Guard when sending them to L.A. And, of course, it was for the purpose of protecting ICE agents who had been under attack while performing their immigration enforcement duties. Breyer ruled that Trump had to return their control to California forthwith. But Breyer's ruling seems kind of strange, since Section 12406 of Title 10 authorizes the president to deploy the National Guard if the governor is, quote, unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States, unquote. And, of course, since LAPD Chief McDonald had announced at the time that his police force was, quote, unquote, overwhelmed, and further stated that, quote, unquote, there's no limit to what they're doing to our officers, then, Hans, wasn't that Title 10 requisite more than satisfied?
It was. But remember, you mentioned who the judge is, Charles Breyer. Look, he was issuing a decision based on politics, not on the law, because the statute's very clear. Well, who is this judge? Well, he's the brother of former Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, who probably was one of the most liberal members of the U.S. Supreme Court that there has ever been. And I think it's very clear, particularly when you give it a look at his record, that this was a lawless decision, because, this, like I said, the statute's very clear. This is not very complicated to understand. And listen, Al, I'll ask you this question. He also cited the 10th Amendment, right? The 10th Amendment, the one about states' rights. When was the last time you ever heard a liberal Democratic judge cite
really?
state rights? Come on.
Well, yeah, but even the 10th Amendment doesn't address this particular issue. I'm a big fan of the 10th Amendment, but it doesn't apply here. Because,
no, it does not.
Yeah, it doesn't have the contingency necessary to allow anybody to ignore the feds in this instance. And besides that, we've seen a myriad of rulings where states have been denied the right to defend themselves from invasion because it's supposedly under the strict auspices of the feds. I don't see how we flip that on its head just because Trump's the one in office saying, hey, as head of the feds, I'm now exerting my control over the management of illegal immigrants and also the havoc wrought in cities because of people objecting to our fulfilling the very laws of the land. It seems to me that the 10th Amendment just doesn't apply here, does it?
No, it doesn't. And look, all I can say is it's a good thing that Judge Breyer wasn't a federal judge back in 1957 when Dwight Eisenhower had to send federal troops to Little Rock, Arkansas. Why? Well, because local authorities there, including the governor, were saying states' rights, no, you can't enforce the Civil Rights Act here, and no, we're not going to allow black students into Central High School. And Eisenhower, they were being threatened by mobs. I mean, the situation is almost identical to what's been going on in L.A.
Oh, precisely. And I really, I just can't believe how they're trying to characterize what Trump did as sort of escalatory, as if things would have been worse. The only reason why he called in the guard was because we didn't have the LAPD responding when ICE was in trouble. I mean,
right.
And to say that, you know, I was reading here in the Washington Post, well, President Trump ordered the California National Guard to intervene, a move condemned as escalatory and unnecessary by Democrats in the state. But by that imbecilic measure, one can never counter violence because doing so would only make things more violent. I mean, does that argument really pass muster with anyone having an IQ above a sandwich? I mean, think about it. They're essentially saying, don't try to stop our law-breaking and defend yourself against violence because you'll just generate more law-breaking and violence. I mean, if you want us to stop, you must allow us to do so on our timeline. I mean, it seems imbecilic in its face, does it not?
It is silly, and it's particularly, look, what makes this worse is, look, there's been plenty of video showing the violence, cars burning, looting going on, officers being attacked. It's not as if it's a secret, and that you've had officials out there trying to deny that all that was happening and saying, well, in any event, even if some of it is happening, well, we just need to allow it to happen because otherwise it'll escalate. No, when that kind of violence, when mobs are acting you have to nip that in the bud as soon as possible, or it'll get worse.
Yeah, because otherwise you're saying, oh, don't stop a bad thing because trying to will only make it worse. Well, by such such a strategy, you're ensuring that those who are doing wrong get to continue doing so with impunity. Look, if incentives reinforce behavior, then clearly only disincentives can counter the bad. Or am I missing something here, Hans?
No, you're not. And I said, all this boils down to lack of enforcement of immigration law.
Precisely. And provably, the president does not need the governor's permission before sending those National Guards. Granted, there's been a tradition of letting governors know beforehand, but tradition is not obligation, especially when you're dealing with a governor who's hostile to the very remedy the president would provide. Hans, if you can, buddy, hang on the line for just a moment. Folks, you're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Going to be right back.
Being a soldier, it's always fun for us when the month of June rolls around, getting to celebrate the Army birthday. I think for this year specifically, it's sort of extra special as we celebrate, you know, a quarter of a millennium of service here, 250 years of, you know, the Army's story of service, its lineage, its history, its traditions. Throughout history, 250 years, the world has changed so much. The challenges have changed. The battlefield has certainly evolved. These uniforms that the American soldier wears have certainly changed many times. One thing that we like to believe has not changed, though, are sort of the timeless values of the American soldier. For myself and many like me that serve in our present-day Army, getting to get up every morning and put on this uniform, we like to believe, you know, paying respects and in homage to those that came before us and paved the way so that we could have the Army that we do today. Heading over to GoArmy.com would be a tremendous place to start, or for a younger crowd. Instagram also works. Any one of those would be a great idea to go find out more.
Pickleball is the country's fastest growing sport and has increased 311% in popularity over the last 3 years. So how do we stay fueled and ready for action on the court this summer? Sports dietitian Dawn Jackson-Blattner shares her advice.
I'm teaming up with Eggland's Best to power up pickleball players with great nutrition. Eggland's Best eggs are packed with nutrients that help you stay energized and promote muscle recovery. Before a match, try my portable protein cookie bites or whip up a crispy quinoa omelet for post-match performance. Both are made with Eggland's Best eggs, which have 6 times more vitamin D, 25% less saturated fat, and double the omega-3s compared to ordinary eggs. They're the nutrition powerhouse to keep your game strong. Now through July 15th, you can enter the Eggland's Best Pickleball Power-Up Sweepstakes. Enter daily at ebfamilysweeps.com. No purchase necessary for a chance to win exceptional prizes like $5,000 plus EB and lifetime pickleball gear.
You can enter once daily at ebfamilysweeps.com.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. You want to give your baby everything, so start with a safe sleep area. Babies younger than one should always be placed to sleep on their backs on a firm and flat surface like a safety-approved crib. And keep blankets, pillows, and other soft or loose items out of the crib when the baby is in it. Learn more about safe sleep for babies at safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs. at pva.org.
I think that we're going to continue to see President Trump's executive orders and his constitutional base continue to be attacked by Democrats like Gavin Newsom because he's politicizing his office. We can clearly see what's happening in California. You have riots, you have ICE that's being completely overrun. So what President Trump did as the commander in chief under his Article II powers was send in the National Guard as a defensive move to protect individuals. And what we're constantly seeing is Gavin Newsom try and usurp his authority. The president has the authority to call in the National Guard under 10 USC. The execution of federal law is necessary here. When you're looking for a defensive posture to actually protect federal building and ICE officers, that's exactly what President Trump is inclined to do. And what Gavin Newsom is doing is politicizing this by going to court. The fact is he cannot veto or override President Trump's legal authority here. He's going to lose in the Ninth Circuit. And this is a waste of court resources and taxpayer dollars.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. You were listening to attorney and president of American Frontier. She was on Fox News' Fox and Friends with Todd Pirro, one Mayhick Cook. And she's saying that Democrats will continue to attack Trump's executive orders and constitutional powers. She further adds that California Governor Gavin Newsom is actually politicizing his office with his attacks on Trump's. She adds that Trump clearly had the authority to use the National Guard to protect federal buildings and federal ICE agents, and that Newsom's legal challenge is a waste of taxpayer money and court resources. Pardon me. She really does believe that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is going to bat Gavin Newsom down. I am not so sure. I know that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is not as liberal as it used to be. I know that there have been some Trump appointees put in the mix as well. But anyway, I hope she's right. We have assisting in the opining and analyzing old friend of the show, Hans von Spakovsky, manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative. He's also a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Hans, good to have you back. Appreciate you sticking around. Thanks so much.
Sure. And Alan, I mean, look, I'm with you. I mean, the Ninth Circuit is still a bad court of appeals. It's got a little bit better, but even if the Trump administration loses in the Ninth Circuit, there will be an emergency appeal immediately filed with the U.S. Supreme Court. And I have no doubt the U.S. Supreme Court will come down on the side of the Trump administration again, because this particular – look, a lot of federal laws, as you and I both know, are complicated and big. It's hard to understand. Sure. This one isn't. I mean, there's one line. One line in this statute that applies, the president can call the federal service if, quote, the president is unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. That's all it takes.
And what I read earlier with the governor. The governor. That's all that has to be the case. That's true. So provably the president does not need the governor's permission before sending in those guards. Now, granted, it's been a tradition of letting governors know beforehand, but a tradition is not obligation, especially when you're dealing with a guy like Newsom. So is it accurate to say that Trump can send them just as the feds sent in the National Guard to Alabama in the 1960s when Governor Wallace tried to preempt blacks from attending schools which were then only frequented by whites? This seems to be the proverbial no-brainer, and it's almost an embarrassment that Judge Breyer, the district court, the brother of the Supreme Court Justice Breyer, would ever even embarrass himself or humiliating himself by demonstrating such either A, disconnect from the law, or B, functional illiteracy. I mean, look at what it makes clear. 1206 is quite straightforward, is it not?
It is. I think he's so driven by left-wing ideology that's what caused him to rule that way. I got to say, by the way, that, look, we all know Gavin Newsom really wants to run for president, but between the total incompetence and the mishandling of the fires in L.A.
Oh, my God, the fires.
And his total incompetence here in himself, Not
oh, by the
really.
Way, and by the way, my friend, it wasn't just the fires in L.A. It's the permitting for people to rebuild. Only about 50 permits have been issued after hundreds of requests. But again, circling back to the National Guard permission, I mean, it seems to me that Breyer should start, and Gavin Newsom should as well, learn that Section 12406 of Title 10 authorizes the president to deploy the National Guard if the governor is, as you stated, quote, unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States, unquote. And by the way, LAPD Chief McDonald, you know, he not only said his officers were overwhelmed, he also said there's no limit to what they're doing to our officers. But then he went on to state this, quote, to the people who are not happy with the fact that ICE is in the community doing what ICE does, I respect ICE for being a fellow law enforcement agency. They have their mission and what they must do. We don't engage in that activity, but we can't preclude them from doing that. And then he went on to say this, they have every right to do so, unquote. Now, I swear to God, Trump's people better make sure that quotation's included in anything they put forward to the Ninth Circuit. Where am I mistaken?
Oh, no, they should have put his quotes in. And particularly, look, if this gets to the Supreme Court, that statement from that officer saying it's out of control, we can't handle this ourselves, that will be prime evidence when the Supreme Court looks at this, if they do.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, oh, my God. And then, of course, you got Democrats expressing outrage over Trump's quote-unquote lawless deployment of the Marines. But even in that area, as long as they're only protecting federal property and personnel and don't engage in non-federal law enforcement duties, as per Trump's marching orders to them, Hans, then their presence is perfectly in compliance with the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, is it not? I mean, here's what the Posse Comitatus Act says. It says, quote, it's just one sentence. Whoever, except in cases and under circumstances expressly authorized by the Constitution or Act of Congress, willfully uses any part of the Army or of the Air Force as posse comitatus or otherwise to execute the laws, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 2 years or both. But here's what the Brennan Center says. There are statutory exceptions to the Posse Comitatus Act, but the most important one is the Insurrection Act. And the Insurrection Act allows the president, with or without the state government's consent, to use the military to enforce federal law or suppress a rebellion against federal authority in a state or to protect a group of people's civil rights when the state government is unable or unwilling to do so. Now, Hans, as a matter of language, hasn't the tripwire for even that been reached?
It has. And again, you don't hear anybody complaining over the fact, and I think maybe people have forgotten this, that Dwight Eisenhower deployed the 101st Airborne.
That's right.
To Little Rock to enforce civil rights laws.
There you go. And it seems to me that the Ninth Circuit Court is a group, and therefore there's somebody to tap somebody else on the shoulder and say, let's not be imbecilic like the guy in the lower court. He's on his own. Nobody's there tapping him on his shoulder. But with an appellate court, there's more resources for better thinking. Or am I being overly sanguine about that, Hans von Spakovsky?
No, there's more resources and more law clerks doing better research.
All right, we'll have to let it go there. Always great to have you on board. Hans von Spakovsky, everybody, manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative and senior legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network.
It's not the glamorous part of world travel, but picking up a preventable virus instead of an exotic souvenir is a guaranteed way to ruin a trip. Whether planning a family vacation, mapping out a solo adventure, or traveling for work this summer, the CDC is urging travelers to think beyond the suitcase when it comes to preparing for a trip abroad. Dr. Amy Lynn Safady gives us some tips for overseas travel.
The CDC recommends consulting with a healthcare provider clear at least 4 to 6 weeks ahead of your trip to allow time to prepare. Depending on where you're traveling, there may be vaccines you should consider or be required to receive. CVS Pharmacy has many necessary vaccines such as Tdap, hepatitis B, typhoid, cholera, Japanese encephalitis, and more. Availability varies by state. Also, be sure you're up to date on your prescriptions and have an ample supply on hand to last the duration of your trip, plus extra just in case of travel delays.
You can make appointments for yourself and your family by visiting CVS.com or with the CVS Health app. Summer has arrived, presenting great job opportunities within the travel industry. Pilot, the largest network of travel centers with nearly 900 locations across 44 states, is hiring 7,500 team members. With weekly pay, training, support, and competitive benefits, Pilot is committed to supporting its team and helping them make the most of their miles. Abby Bilbrey, field recruiter at Pilot, shares insights on the company's commitment to hiring as summer travelers hit the open road.
Pilot is hiring 7,500 team members called Journey Makers across our travel centers, on-site restaurants, and tanker fleet. We seek driven, reliable, authentic, and welcoming individuals to ensure our guests are fueled up, filled up, and lifted up for the road ahead. Join us to be part of a company that continues to show people they matter at every turn.
To learn more or to apply to become a journey maker, visit jobs.pilotflyingj.com/national hiring.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach, absolutely delighted you could be with us. Wow, what interesting times we find ourselves living in. Now that Israel has dominance over Iranian skies, the Islamic dictatorship wants to resume talks over curtailing its nuclear weapons program, while the Jewish state continues its 14-day mission to destroy the regime's nuclear sites and hold on power. So what's going to follow? Additionally, the 19th Appellate Court stayed a lower court's restraining order to stop Trump's use of the National Guard in L.A. and will now preside over a hearing on California's challenge to Trump on the matter. Which side will prevail? We have assisting in the opining and analyzing one Robert Romano, old friend of the show, Vice President of Public Policy at Americans for Limited Government. He's here to chat with us about a Harvard-Harris poll showing 56% support National Guard deployment. Robert, good to have you back as always. How are you today?
It's great to be on, Alan. Thank you.
Good to have you. Good to have you. I think one of the reasons why they support it is because the body politic has a bit of recall. It remembers that the president has before, without governor permission, used the National Guard in emergencies, whether it's to ensure that blacks were allowed to access colleges once only frequented by whites in Arkansas, pushing aside then Governor Wallace to implement those laws, or a myriad of other unfortunate incidences when said protocols had to be put in motion. I think people have a sense that, yes, the president does have this authority. What say you on this?
The president absolutely has this authority going all the way back to the very first Congress, which adopted the Insurrection Act, which President George Washington utilized to put down the Whiskey Rebellion. And that had to do with enforcement of laws, in that case, tax laws and excise tax on whiskey that locally in Pennsylvania were not cooperating with tax collectors. And that was more than enough to justify saying there was a rebellion and to call forth the federal militia, to federalize the state militias and to send them in there to put down the rebellion. And I don't believe that this invocation of executive authority by the president has been seriously questioned since, frankly, the Civil War. President Abraham Lincoln similarly had to invoke the Insurrection Act to take the war to the South and to put down the Confederacy. And as you noted, it's been used more recently to enforce civil rights laws, but also in examples like the Rodney King riots in L.A., just simply to restore law and order. And I believe the American people have it right here. They're right on the issue, and they're right on the constitutional aspect of this as well. It is not necessary to wait for a governor to request aid. I mean, wouldn't the South have loved that in the Civil War? They could have just told Lincoln he had to go home, and that would have been the end of it. The United Union would have split apart because the governors of the southern states didn't want to cooperate. Or on the issue of enforcing civil rights laws, that it would have been wholly optional for states to have implemented Brown v. Board of Education. If Wallace had just said, oh, yeah, go back home, 101st Airborne, Eisenhower had none of it. And he put in the 101st Airborne to ensure that students were protected. John F. Kennedy had to do the same exact thing in the 1960s. And I believe President Trump is correct in asserting this authority to put down these riots before they really spread very far. And we're hoping
that it does appear, pardon me, but it does appear that required trip wires were activated to validate Trump's reasoning in this regard. Now, as you know, Governor Newsom, he announced that California was suing Trump over its use of the National Guard. But the truth is, Section 12406 of Title 10 does authorize Trump to deploy the National Guard if the governor is, and I'm quoting now, unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States, unquote. And since LAPD Chief McDonald did announce that his police force was, quote unquote, overwhelmed, adding that, quote unquote, there's no limit to what they're doing to our officers, unquote, that Title 10 requisite did seem to be more than satisfied. I was just talking about this with Hans von Spakovsky, former prosecutor with the United States governor, now with the Heritage Foundation, and he completely agreed. But there's also something else here. LAPD Chief McDonald had also stated about the legitimacy of ICE, because, you know, Gavin Newsom and others, it's a 1-2 punch. They're saying, you know, but for ICE essentially enforcing laws that we don't like, then Trump wouldn't have had the excuse to call in the National Guard because there wouldn't have been any trouble to begin with. But even Chief McDonald, LAPD Chief McDonald, this is what he said, quote, to the people who are not happy with the fact that ICE is in the community doing what ICE does, I respect ICE for being a fellow law enforcement agency. They have their mission and what they must do. We don't engage in that activity, but we can't preclude them from doing that. And then he said, they have every right to do so, unquote. Now, is it fair to say, Robert, is it fair to say that this acknowledgement from the LAPD police chief will be included testimony at the very suit Newsom has brought against the Trump administration? Your take on it?
Yes, I think that they will be quoting the police chief, but it's probably unnecessary that they do so since under the law, the president exclusively is able to politically make that determination whether there's a rebellion and whether it needs to be put down.
It's all his discretion.
Yeah, it's completely within his discretion, and that's the way it's always been in the 30-plus times that the Insurrection Act and similar statutes have been invoked when the federalization of the National Guard, now we call it the National Guard, used to be the militia, is called forth. And it's right in the Constitution under the Commander-in-Chief Clause. Besides the Army and the Navy, it's the militia of the several states that the president is the Commander-in-Chief of when called into the actual service of the United States. It's right in the Constitution. I'm not certain what else courts need to really decide other than that the president, did the president determine there was a rebellion? Check, yes. Did he properly invoke the authority? Check, yes. Okay, it's a political question. If you don't like it, get another president and you won't have a...
Yeah, see, I'm so glad you point that out because I think people have to come to understand that the judiciary as a whole, whether it's an individual court or even the Supreme Court, the judiciary in the aggregate, they cannot rule that the Constitution is in opposition to that which its text explicitly permits, nor can it rule that the Constitution is in support of that which its text explicitly forbids. You know, unless language is no longer tethered to the meanings of the words that comprise it, it would seem to me that the courts are pretty well locked in, which is all the more reason why I'm stunned that the lower court, Judge Breyer, a brother to the former Supreme Court justice, that Judge Breyer actually ruled in favor of Gavin Newsom against Trump, leading to, of course, the Ninth Circuit Court staying his ruling. Were you kind of dumbfounded that we've even gotten this far in the process, Robert?
No, because they've challenged every single executive action that the president has undertaken since being sworn into office on January 20th, and they mean to test every single invocation, if for no other reason than to be a speed bump. But you see senators charging into press conferences held by the Department of Homeland Security and, you know, and also just trying to break into these federal facilities. I think that they want to be seen as openly challenging federal authority, but the most specifically the president's authority, in order to say that they're waging opposition. So they're catering to their political base, which wants to see the president be challenged. And so they're going to exhaust every legal avenue for doing so. And the judges, well, you know, they're going to go along with that if they happen to have been appointed by Democrats. The ones who stand up, even if they were appointed by a Democratic president, will be the exception to say what the law is, as Marbury v. Madison advised.
Yeah, but even Marbury versus Madison, we have to remember, because a lot of liberals like to use that as an excuse to say, well, the judiciary's final say over all rulings. Well, it's true. The jury, the judiciary does have final say over all rulings, but it does not have final say over separation of powers issues when all of a sudden the judiciary becomes just another litigant in that separation of powers struggle. The president does have an ability to check a rogue judiciary, and that's born out of the judiciary's inability to enforce its own rulings. By the way, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Robert Romano of Americans for Limited Government. He's got a great piece out on the Daily Torch. The headline is 56% support deploying National Guard to suppress anti-ICE riots. 55% think President Trump should act when states won't act as no king's fizzles. And I think the Democrats embarrass themselves with this no king's effort because it presupposes that Trump was ever comporting himself as such. And just because the guy doesn't do things in a fashion commensurate with the Democrats' preference does not equal a king, does it, Robert?
It does not. And the president is, you know, he would have already enacted the tax cuts, but here he is still talking to the Senate saying pass the tax cuts.
Precisely. Actually, if you can, Robert, hang on the line for just a moment, folks. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Going to be right back.
Whether you're looking for a relaxing getaway, a family-friendly adventure, or a magical experience, a cruise could be the right choice this year. Travel expert Jeanette Seha has some inspiration.
I love cruising because it offers the opportunity to experience adventure while only unpacking once. With a Disney cruise, for example, you get three vacations in one, seeing the world while also enjoying the luxury of a hassle-free ocean cruise and the magic of a Disney vacation. All Disney Cruise Line ships have been designed with families in mind, with spaces and entertainment dedicated exclusively for kids and adults to enjoy on their own, and even more for families to experience together. There is something for every member of the family. The entertainment is second to none, with Broadway-style entertainment on board and spectacular fireworks at sea. Disney Cruise Line has four ships sailing out of the state of Florida, plus ships sailing right now in beautiful Alaska and Europe this summer.
It's not too late to book your summer travel. For more information, visit DisneyCruise.com. When you or a family member are diagnosed with a chronic illness, everything can change, and caregivers learn to manage complicated care schedules on top of their own daily lives. Trisha Fitzgerald is a mom who's been managing treatment not only for herself, but also for her husband and their six children, all of whom suffer from some type of chronic illness. She explains.
Raising a large family is challenging with busy schedules, school functions, let alone when everyone has a chronic illness. So it's important to make sure you have a strong support system. Managing so many medications for eight individuals can be daunting, but CVS Health is my rock. Anytime I have a medication or insurance question, I know who to call for guidance or answers. CVS is a huge corporation, but it feels more like a small town pharmacy down the street where we've known each other for years, and that makes such a difference when I'm managing care for the chronic conditions my family faces.
For more information, visit CVSHealth.com.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep, for naps and at night, to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
Hmm. You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True. But now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave. But unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS.
I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Over here is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. One thing I've been pointing out as it relates to the struggle that has occurred between the state of California and President Trump's use of the National Guards in L.A. to quell these riots that still seem to be ongoing. Contrary to popular understanding, because Judge Breyer had ruled that Trump was out of order, was violated the law through his use of the National Guard. But contrary to popular understanding, assuming hypothetically that the entire judiciary would agree with Judge Breyer, that would not be the end of it. Because the judiciary is never the final arbiter over whether it has usurped another branch's separated power. All right, yes, it is the final arbiter of how to interpret law. It has the final say over the ruling on law. That's fine. But it is never the final arbiter over whether or not it has usurped another branch's separated powers. Otherwise, it could potentially rule that it has the actionable authority to oversee the military's operations instead of the president or initiate legislation instead of Congress. Now, the president's not a king, okay? So he would also face a possible check against becoming a tyrannical entity should, let's say, he interfere with proper judicial review in the name of protecting his separated powers. Citizens can, through their Congress, either find that a president is right about a judge's rogue conduct and let his rejection pass with no House impeachment and Senate expulsion trial, or the House can find that he is the rogue actor and impeach him, thus sending the case to the Senate for trial. But here's the trick. If it fails to reach the two-thirds vote required to trigger said expulsion, well, guess what? Then the president will have won the constitutional argument in focus as per the highest legal process in the land, and his repulsion of that alleged judicial overreach shall stand. This is regardless of all the sophisticated objections lawyers and judges may wish to spew over its supposed immorality. But guess what? That check nonetheless exists. And it kind of makes sense. Because just as no person can be a judge in his own trial, nor can the judiciary be the final adjudicator when its own branch happens to be one of the two litigants regarding a separation of powers dispute. Again, each branch has certain absolute powers beyond the reach of the other two. And this is to ensure that each may leverage against the other, or others, the checks and balances and reciprocal checks and balances required to maintain and protect their respective allocated authorities. So yes, once again, the Supreme Court has final ruling over the constitutionality of a given argument. Fine. But when assessing whether it has possibly encroached upon another branch's authorities, it provably does not have the final say. So again, the judiciary cannot enforce its own rulings, and born out of that is the president's check on a potential rogue judiciary, for which he can be checked as well by the Congress. But again, if the Senate can't stop him with a two-thirds vote, he will have won that separation of powers argument. Anyway, I didn't mean to get lost in that little tangent, but there we go. We have assisting in the opining and analyzing, sticking around, and we appreciate that, Robert Romano, Vice President of Public Policy for Americans for Limited Government. Robert, I appreciate you sticking around. Thanks again.
Hey, no problem.
Now, again, you mentioned, and you wrote beautifully in your piece, that the Harvard-Harris poll shows 56% of the country supporting the National Guard. That's not only Republicans, but also majority of independents, correct?
Yeah, it's about 55% of independents and a little less than a third of Democrats also support it. So more Democrats support it than Republicans who oppose it. On the question of where the courts lay in all this, and you have the district court's going to do one ruling. Appeals court could overturn that, and then the Supreme Court could overturn that. So there's several layers of judicial review, I believe, still underway here. I do find it noteworthy that the Ninth Circuit waited until after the June 14 No Kings rallies to deign this question. They didn't want the National Guard standing down over the weekend, in other words. When they might have been needed.
Yeah, really.
So, save their own skins. But, maybe they think the worst is past them and that now they can, abrogate the president's authority. Although, again, we still have faith that the Supreme Court will ultimately preclude political questions, which is what Marbury v. Madison was all about.
Yeah.
And that the president is the one who makes the determination whether there's a rebellion and whether or not to call forth the National Guard. There is no other authority for doing so in the Constitution and under the federal statutes that are being properly and lawfully invoked by the President of the United States to bring forth the execution of immigration laws and to maintain civil order. I think that this is crucial. And again, this has not been seriously challenged since the Civil War. And I think, half a million dead Americans is quite enough to determine that the federal government and this Constitution are the supreme law of the land.
Thank you. And yes, and we have to remember something where the Supreme Court is concerned. Yes, in Mulberry versus Madison, 1803, the Supreme Court rightly clarified its branch's authority for judicial review, its power to interpret when a conflict is judicially reviewable and whether challenge laws pass constitutional muster. That's fine. But again, the right to interpret the Constitution has never been a license to unilaterally amend it. That's an Article 5 function, and only a constitutional amendment could allow a court to absorb another branch's allocated authorities, and it seems to me that that's what Judge Breyer was trying to do. That's what so often these 650-some-odd district courts are trying to do as it relates to impeding Trump's agenda as chosen by the electorate, manifested through their selection of him as the president. Where am I mistaken, Robert Romano?
Not at all. And the president and the Justice Department have also lawfully exercised their right to appeal at the Ninth Circuit. And if necessary, they'll go to the Supreme Court. And I have had faith that the Constitution and the president's Article 2 authority will once again consistently be applied in this case.
Precisely. Because, again, yes, judicial review makes sense because, let's face it, there are plenty of times when the Constitution simply doesn't have corresponding language to deal with a particular challenge and focus. So we accept the court's aggregate determinations over these conflicts. But when the Constitution does provide direct wording, or our legislation provides direct wording, and our judiciary disregards their instructions on point, well, that's when the Article 3 community has committed a hostile act against its own citizenry and must be met with the same leverage check it routinely applies to the other two branches. It is a co-equal branch, not a superior one. I guess you would agree with me on that point, would you not, Robert Romano?
Absolutely. The separation of powers must be upheld.
All right. That will conclude the show. Robert, great having you back as always, folks. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.